Welcome to the Simon Parkes Connecting Consciousness Show, produced by Ever Beyond Radio and broadcast on Wolf Spirit Radio on the first and third Sundays of the month at 7 p.m. UK time. Simon actively encourages you to join the conversation by using the Ask Question menu link at the top of the page at wowwowwow.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. Please come early to ask your questions. Now, on with the show. The next 2 hours will be full of debate, interview guests and up-to-date news. Please join Simon in playing an active role. Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Yeah, there we go. Oh yes, it's the 3rd of September, 2017. This is the Connecting Consciousness Show with your host, Simon Parkes. This is JP, your producer. 3rd of September. That's close to your birthday, isn't it?
Yes, JP. We're very close to my birthday. Well, it's lovely to be back, have a chat with you and with the listeners. For British people, I'll be very familiar with the two Ronnies. Most people outside of the country may not, unless they're fans of them. They had a catchphrase, which was, in a packed program tonight. I've got quite a lot to get through, so I'm going to get on with that, and then we go on to the questions. Right, I want to talk about gold and Bitcoin, chain block, and cryptocurrencies. One of the major things that I try and do is bring news ahead of the time so that people can make some decisions. I very recently heard and checked out to see if it was true, and it was confirmed that the National Security Agency, who we already know created Bitcoin, have something to do with the codes that allows them, in Britain we would call it a bail-in, but in America I think it's called a drawdown. Now, I was not aware that by throwing some switches or pressing some buttons, the National Security Agency can empty everyone's Bitcoin account, whether they want it or not. I suppose after the initial shock set in, I realized that it's not that unusual, because that's just what the banks can do. The banks have the ability and the law to empty everyone's bank account. But I didn't realize that on an electronic currency, and that explains now why Russia and China have been trying and are progressing their own cryptocurrency. So my warning to everybody is, if you are going to invest in blockchain or any form of cryptocurrency, and be aware that the National Security Agency have both the technology and the right in law, never mind moral right, but the right in law to empty your bank account electronically. So that's a really important thing. There are a number of people now moving to gold, and I've always said that gold is, you know, a fairly safe fallback position, but with the caveat that there are a very small number of people who manipulate the gold prices. So the gold price that we see is not equal to the freedom within the stock exchange. So by and large, the stock market will move to the action of people who are buying and selling. But the gold market doesn't really work like that. The gold market works by between three and five people who set the gold prices. So whilst gold is a good position to move to, just be aware that it can be manipulated at a very short notice. We haven't really talked much about gold, and I wanted to spend a little time on gold. The country with the largest declared gold reserves, whether they've got it or not, this is the declared gold reserves, is America, with around about 8,133 tons of gold. Then comes Germany with 3,377 tons of gold. Then Italy, 2,451 tons. France, 2,435. China, 1,842. Russia, 1,642. Switzerland, not surprising they're up there, with just over 1,000 tons. Then begins to drop down with Japan on 760, the Netherlands, believe it or not, on 600, and India on 557 tons. Interesting, Great Britain's not in there. Now, if you were to believe the establishment, they will tell you that Great Britain has something like 6,200 tons of gold. Technically, that's accurate. But of the 6,200 tons of gold, only 310 tons are owned by the British government, the Bank of Britain. All the rest, that's what, 5,900 tons, are owned by private individuals who seek to place their gold in Britain. And apart from the big vault, which is the largest in the world, actually, apart from Fort Knox, which is under Threadneedle Street, which is the Bank of England, there are three very sizable vaults within, just outside of the Heathrow Airport. And the reason for that is, in times of an emergency, these private individuals will just get their gold on a charter flight, which they, I believe they have sort of standing by 24/7, and just fly the gold out. So that's really interesting that there are three major underground gold vaults right close up to the airport, the major airport in Britain, to get their gold out of there. So we have thanked Gordon Brown, who was then the Chancellor of Britain, for selling off the gold. So something like only 300 tons of gold left in Britain. Now, there are two questions that come from the news lately. It's come to the fore because Germany has finally managed to claw back its gold reserves held in America. It's not new. It started bringing its first tranche of gold back in February of this year. But here's the background. In 2012, Germany sent an official request to the then president to repatriate the gold. It's German's gold. It's nobody else's. I think the Americans were looking after it for them. But what is interesting is why 2012? It's because it was the time of the change, the resonance, the time when the establishment began to lose control of its populations. Could go further to say it was the moment that many elite governments were at war with their own citizenry. So that's when Germany immediately put in for its return of the gold. It's taken since 2012 to get that gold back. Now, Sputnik, which is the Russian news agency, and actually it's got a base here in Scotland, would you believe it? Not far from you, actually, JP, although it's further south. This is, without question of a doubt, it's the mouthpiece of the Kremlin. I wouldn't even doubt that. But that doesn't mean that the information it gives is false or wrong. And Sputnik actually put forward a very interesting point, that it has taken since 2012 for America to return the German gold because they didn't have it. And it's taken them that long to buy gold from elsewhere. And I suppose the Germans don't care as long as it's of the same value and the same weight. So the question is, why has Germany asked for its gold back now? What do they know that many other governments don't know? Why did they feel they needed the return of their gold? There was 1,200 tons of German gold held in America. And incidentally, there's 432 tons of German gold held in London. Of the 3,370-odd tons, half Germany is going to move to Frankfurt. That's where they're going to set up their enlarged stock exchange. The question isn't really, why did Germany want their gold back? The question is, how is it that in the world, Germany has the second largest gold reserves, only beaten by America? In 1945, Germany was bombed to bits. The Americans, the British, and to a lesser extent the French, were swarming all over what became Western Germany. The mighty Russian army, many millions of strong, were all over Eastern Germany. The country was on its knees. How in goodness knows name has that country now got the second largest gold reserve in the world? There's something not right. So I wanted to bring that up and say to people that watch the gold price as we go into October. That'll be very interesting. Okay, second bit. I want to talk about the meditation. It caused a bit of a stir, and why not? If people could listen to the 2 week ago broadcast, I was never against the meditation. What I couldn't tell people, and I can tell you now, was that I had had very credible information that two people, and unfortunately I don't have their names because if I did I would out them publicly, two individuals had infiltrated Corey Good's organization. The attempt was to use the meditation, which Cobra, Corey, Connecting Consciousness, many people were going to be involved in. The attempt was to hijack that for bad purposes. Now, I still don't have the names of those two people, and some people have written in and said, is it Steve, Corey Good's manager? And it isn't. I can confirm that it's not. People are saying that because Steve, apparently, I've never met him, but he's got tattoos of pentagrams and skulls on his body. But that is not the name. The name, we don't have the two names, but I've been categorically told it's not Steve, it's not Corey Good's manager. It's not unusual. I've had people in Connecting Consciousness trying to cause trouble, and I'm sure we all have. Now, Dave Wilcox, who is a good friend of Corey Good and definitely has worked on the Gaia TV show, he came off Facebook and he posted that the zombies were after him. Now, people who don't understand will just laugh because they think of zombies as a zombie apocalypse film. But I know what David means when he says the zombies, and nobody should be in any doubt that when I reported that both of my brake cables failed instantaneously, within 2 weeks of that, Dave Wilcox also had his brake cables fail. In fact, I think they were cut. Mine sort of had a sort of an acidy, corrosion-y stuff. This is not coincidental. People who are trying to do good work are really being attacked at the moment. So I was never trying to stop the meditation. What I was absolutely determined to do was to put an energy block on these individuals who were attempting to hijack. And if people listen back, I talked about the Hadron Collider, how the Earth has a biorhythmic wave, and the bad guys wanted to use the natural upswing of that energy. And in the same way, there was a move afoot to use the natural upswing of meditation energy and try and turn that to bad. Think about Michael Shrimpton. Michael Shrimpton went public that he believed a bomb was going to explode in the 2012 London Olympics. No bomb exploded. He was arrested by the establishment and served a jail term. He's out now. The reason no bomb exploded wasn't because there was no bomb, because the plan to put a bomb was outed, because he was brave enough to go forward and say, this is what's going to happen, and others as well, but he caught the flak of the establishment. And in the same way, when I and others say a statement, if it doesn't come true, it doesn't mean that we were wrong. What it means is we've preempted or we've prevented something that was about to happen. So that's, I wanted to make that clear. I want to talk about the weather at the moment. The weather in the States, and I know, JP, we were talking about the seismic activity, and I'm linking those two together. The weather is all over the place. Yes, we talk about hurricanes and cyclones, sort of beginning of the year, the end of the year. But this is not natural. The weather effects are being artificially created by HAARP, but the seismic activity is largely natural. The Earth is changing. The Earth is developing. And although this is a natural positive development, there could well be outpourings onto the Earth's surface. There could be seismic shocks. It's not, to my knowledge, the information I have so far, it's not being attacked or used. This is the Earth going through an evolutionary process. I wanted just to nip across now, because we don't always talk about Roswell, and people would think, well, that old chestnut, haven't we done it to death? We probably haven't, actually. I wanted to talk about Roswell because 1947 when the Roswell spacecrafts, more than one, crashed. Very quickly afterwards, it was President Truman who created the National Security Act. And ordinary people who are not awake and aware just don't see the connection between the crash and then just a very few short months later, a massive change in the American law. The National Security Act of 1947, for people who are outside of America and don't know the history, not only created the CIA, it actually created the National Security Council, and it divided the Air Force away from the Army and the Navy, because prior to that, the Army had its Air Force and the Navy had its Air Force. The United States Air Force was created. This was predominantly to intercept UFOs. They wanted the United States Air Force to be under one command to intercept UFOs. The CIA was created to deal with situations like the Roswell, and the National Security Council was seen as the overarching thing. Truman had no idea what he created. When he created that, he couldn't have understood how this machine was going to run away with him, and what we call the military political industrial complex. And we can only think of Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, who had a few words to say on the matter.
Simon?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, you just had a few words to say about that, and then you went silent.
Can you hear this?
Yeah. Now I can't hear you. We're getting a bit of interference, I think. Maybe it's mentioning the military industrial complex.
That's right, yeah.
No, I can't hear you anymore, Simon.
Okay, all right. We'll just stop that then. What I was trying to do was to play Eisenhower's words. When Eisenhower was on his last few days, and he was handing over to the next incoming president, and he was basically warning everybody that the industrial military political complex was out of control. People in America will be very used to that, and they'll know about that, but people outside of that won't. And I'm linking that back with Harry Truman, who created the beginnings of an arm of intelligence which was separate from the president. So it was a very great shame that something that was designed with the best intentions in the world actually ended up being taken away from the normal law process and being handed across to something else.
I have Eisenhower's statement about that.
Ah,
if you want me to play that.
That would be great. Let's have that.
Okay.
Just the bit.
Yeah, there's a 2 minute part.
Yeah, let's have that. That'd be great. Okay. That's what I was trying.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed four major wars among great nations.
Can you hear it?
No, they've done to him what they did to JFK and shut him up.
Oh no, it's okay. It's playing on the station.
Oh, as long as it's here.
Until the latest world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Okay, there we go. That played. So, yeah.
Good. Okay, well, I'm glad that we were able to do that, because these are very, very poignant words by a man who clearly was beaten down, felt very bad that he was leaving office with a situation that he couldn't control. And it must be very hard for good men or women who go into politics, as I did, and you see the corruption around you, and you do your best to try and change it, but in the end you think, well, I've got to get out of it. And so he did. So I commend those words, because they were heartfelt, and they're as true today as they were then. Right, I want to go on and thank people who have so kindly donated and kept this show on the road. Thank you to Sandra, Jennifer, Candice, Tom, Rudolph, Marion, Neil, Florin, John, Stefan, Linise, Michael K. Thank you, Michael. I need to give you a call. I haven't forgotten you. Jana, Virginia, Theodore. Thank you, Theodore. That was really kind. Juanita, Christian, Life Knight, Julius, Natalie, Joanne, Shirley, Sarah, and this one I really love. Healthy, Wealthy and Wise. What a great name. Jana, Benjamin, and then Chinese symbols. I guess the person didn't want to me to use their name, so just the Chinese symbols. George, Susan, Sheena, Charlene, Antonio, Shari, Ram Trading, thank you, Charlotte, Carla, Andrew, Jorg, Jamie, Maria, Kylie, Jason, Mia, Leaf, nearly finished, Louis, Jason, Julie, and Alan. Thank you very much indeed. Now, a number of you have sent me some emails with the star in the header. The good news is they've arrived, got those, and over the coming week, you will be contacted. So it has worked, and those emails have come through. So we've got quite a few with star in the header. They've been arrived, and we will get back to you. So thank you, JP, and thank you, everybody. Right, shall we go on with the questions?
Okay, so let's go to the appropriate box there. Here we are. Okay, right. So let's start off with a nice long one. They're all long today. This is from Naus, Tickled at Night. When I was about 4 to 5 years old, I woke up in the middle of the night. I was lying on my side, facing the wall that my bed was pushed up against. I was trying to fall asleep again when suddenly I felt something tickle me on my back while laughing. I was paralyzed the moment the fingers touched me. It lasted about 10 seconds, and when I was finally able to move again, I then called for my mum and told her about it. She obviously just told me it was a bad dream. I don't remember what it felt like to be paralyzed. I don't remember what it felt like to be tickled. But what I do remember is the laugh that this being had. This was a laugh that specifically said, I'm here, I'm scaring you, and there's nothing you can do about it. And that makes me happy. I'm now 21 years old, and to this day I can't sleep without a blanket covering my back. Could you please explain what exactly it was that happened that night?
It's unusual. I do not believe it was a demon. I do not believe that was a djinn. I do believe that was an entity, what we would call an alien. And it's not got the modus operandi of a demon. That is not how a demon operates. So we're looking at a fourth dimensional entity. Didn't say whether it was a male or a female. It may have been a female. Does the questioner say how old he was at the time?
Said he was, I think about, hang on, let me just scroll back down to it. He was about 4 to 5 years old, he said. Yeah, 4 to 5.
Thank you. Right. That is a fourth dimensional entity who is just literally hell-bent on trying to traumatize him. But that won't just come out of the blue. It didn't just pop along like that. There has to be more of a history. There has to be more of a reason to it. It may be that is the only thing that you've remembered, but I don't think that's just the one incident. These things don't generally make a journey to do that to a person and then just disappear again. There tends to be a reason why that being was in your bedroom. So I guess the good news is that it's not demonic. It's nothing like that. This is what so many people get. A fourth dimensional, not necessarily reptilian, but will have some form of reptilian in it, targeting you. But that's only part of the story. So I hope that helps. But there is much more behind that, I'm sure. But thank you for writing in.
Okay. This is from Starstaff. Had a really disturbing dream recently, 27th of the 8th. I woke up thinking about the dream and going over and over trying to remember the details. Unfortunately, as I became more awake, the details slipped away. But what I did remember was two terrorist attacks. One was the bombing, the other was a knife. The bombing, I have no details, but I can remember seeing the knife with blood on the end and the young man chanting while holding up the knife. The overall theme of the dream was that these people were very ordinary and had no clue as to what they were about to do. Something or someone got in their heads and they carried out the attacks. It was like watching a movie, but obviously it was a dream. Do you think this dream has any significance? Or since I'm from Australia and attacks are rare here, do you think it was just a random mixed up dream?
Well, it could easily be a random mixed up dream, couldn't it? This is the difficulty. Without more detail, and I appreciate you can't, you can only remember what you can remember. We do dream. That's the thing. People dream. And sometimes our dreams can be really, really in-depth. What I look for is clue elements within a dream to show me whether it's either a divine source that is trying to, you know, give you information and tip you off, or whether it's coming from somewhere else which may not be quite as divine, but nevertheless, you know, is still of an interest. If we are psychic, we can either see the past, present, or the future. If it appears to you that you are seeing something in the future, then what you perhaps might want to do is begin to train yourself so that you're looking for anything that will give you markers for a time or a location, you know, such an interesting building, or if you saw a tree, is the tree in leaf or is it like winter? So begin to, if this was something that had on a regular basis, begin to try to be a detective, shall we say. And I appreciate that that's pretty difficult and that may be the only dream like that you ever get. So I'm not going to write it off and say, look, you know, come on, you watched the news, you got shocked by the news, you went to bed and you dreamed. I'm hopefully too sensible to just write off stuff like that. But I think that without more detail and without the chance of having more information, the jury's out. We don't know whether that is. What would be perhaps more of interest is if you personally were going to go on a journey and there was a warning dream, then I would always change your plans. So what you've seen is a terrorist attack. You may well have connected with a crossover into this realm of a projected attack or something that's already happened. But you can't speculate unless you've got more information. But thank you for sharing it. There are lots of people, that's all I can tell you, there are lots of people at the moment having these sort of dreams. You're the fifth person who has told me they've had this connection. So that's why I'm not just saying to you, look, it's the man, it's a dream, forget it. I'm saying to you, be ready, because you may get another dream, then become a bit of a detective. So thank you for not just asking me that question, but for alerting other people, because if other people get that dream, then maybe, you know what, we can coordinate something and get some idea of what's going on. Thank you.
Be good to have some kind of dream database. From Nuck Joris. Now, this is there's a personal question here, and he says, if this is a subject you do not wish to talk about, fully understand if you don't want to answer it. But in the past, you've stated you're able to shapeshift. You've also said you will not do it on camera in order to prove it. But could you please explain to us if you mean that you can do a full body shapeshift, and tell us what it feels like? How does it feel to shapeshift? And if you did go public and shapeshift on camera in front of a large audience, what consequences would you face for doing so?
Oh, good question.
Thanks for all your hard work.
No, I'm happy to answer questions like that. Last year? Oh, I can't remember. I went to Nottingham to do a conference. And I was up on stage, and I actually said to the audience, you know what, I can shapeshift. Nobody responded. It just went whoosh, straight over their heads. Now, I can't full body shapeshift. No, only reptilians can do that, or full reptilian entities. No, I can't do anything like that. Now, what happens is my eyes can change. That's actually quite common for people. People who've got a fair bit of reptilian in them, their eyes can change. Now, I don't do it publicly because for people who don't understand, it's too much of a shock. They would either just say it was a, you know, CGI, some trick of the camera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And those that did would just run screaming to the hills. And that's not what I'm about. I'm about educating people. I've always said that we should never judge a person because they have some reptilian in them or some grey in them or this, that, and all the other. We should judge people because that's what they are. And the problem with this 3D planet, even amongst people who call themselves awake and aware, is they're too ready to judge, to look at a stereotyped image, to tick a box and say, you know, this is that and that's that. When I said what I said a year ago, I wanted to start a debate. I wanted to challenge people's perceptions of what is right and what is wrong. Sadly, the audience didn't respond to that, so I just let it go. So it's a good chance to answer the question. What would happen to me? I would suggest that it would start a big debate, and that would be very interesting. No, I can't change my arms or legs or anything like that. I have met 7 people to date who can physically change part of their body. 5 of them are in the States, and the other 2 are in Britain. So they physically could change this, so their arm would become scales. Absolutely. Just like chicken scales. Very fascinating. But no, I sadly can't do any party tricks like that. So it's a good question, and thank you.
All right. What changes about your eyes?
Well, they can become sort of overly and move to one side. So, you know, it happens from time to time.
Have you heard of a TV show called People of Earth?
No. That's a new one.
It is a new one. It just came out this year. And it's about an abductee support group.
Okay.
And it's a comedy. It's like one of the guys from The Daily Show is in it. There is a shapeshifting. Well, he's not a shapeshifting, actually. He's just wearing a mask, a skin mask.
Okay.
And they have a grey and a Nordic and and reptilians and an AI.
Okay.
Who, for our regular audience, the AI's name is Eric. Just to make things a bit strange, because I have a spoof AI, a spoof alien called Eric. Character that sometimes comes with, so it just got a bit strange. So anyway, meanwhile, back in
what's interesting there is it would be fascinating to know who were the director or who produced or who wrote that, because you wouldn't I don't believe you wouldn't produce a show like that unless you were under orders to do so and the budget was there, specifically with AI. I mean, that is so hot topic. Yeah, greys, I can understand that, and to a lesser extent, reptilians. But remember when I went on The Breakfast Show, they wouldn't even allow my drawing of a reptilian. They refused to air that. So here we've got a show where someone's got a reptilian mask. Now, the problem with these things is it's all about poking fun and not taking it seriously. This is the way the media's got the brief. The brief is you've got to disclose in a soft way, but you've got to do it in a humorous way. That is the brief. So they can't sit down and do a decent, straightforward documentary because that's too hard-hitting and too realistic. So what the media has been told to do is to wrap it all up in a joke. So it neither does one thing nor the other. It neither turns people off nor does it educate them. And that is probably just about right what the media on this planet is available for. So I always say to people, yeah, watch something like that and have a jolly good laugh. But remember what the establishment called the alternative media, or some within our own group. But really, it's the truth movement. We shouldn't look on the alternative media as the alternative media. It is the truth movement. It is the only media giving you truth. Yes, I know there's lots of disinformation, etc., but by and large, individual organizations trying to provide a clear understanding of what's going on the planet, they're not alternative. They are the truth movement, and I would like people to start using that phrase. I'm not the first one to use it. It's been around a while, but it is most accurately portrays what we are all about, and it also contrasts us with mainstream media who are not in the business of providing the truth. So, yeah, by all means, watch something like that, but be aware that there's an agenda behind that. And I hadn't even heard of that. So thank you, JP. And I'm sure that many of our audience will actually just go look that up now.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very lighthearted view of it and obviously a very serious thing. But it does address some of the issues. Like there's one guy who's like, oh, I want to be abducted. You know, like he's a fanboy. And of course, when he does get abducted, it's not good. So there we go. but it's got some good bits in it. So meanwhile, Matsu from Japan, thank you very much for taking my question. I'll keep it short. From the last show, Simon, you spoke about the opening scene from Downton Abbey, where the place settings were perfectly measured using a ruler and how very reptilian that was. I live in a country that functions on the same standard, perfection and conformity. My question, are the Japanese people direct descendants of the Draconius reptilian? Also, there's another question. For the last show, you ended on the topic of missing children. It's absolutely horrific with what happens to these children. My question, for the parents out there, what can we do to make our babies and children less of an appealing target? So, first of all, Japanese, are they Draconius descendants?
No, they're not. But think about China and Japan, how the dragon is a very important part of symbology and mythology and energy. It is because of not the fact that the people of Japan are descended from Draconis reptilian, but the law and the way that the elite clans, going back a few hundred years, the elite clans and groups were infiltrated, and I don't mean physically, I mean through their dreams, through their commitment to honor, which is absolutely brilliant. So don't misunderstand me, but the ability to offer yourself and die in the process, you are either a very pure, very good person, or you are totally fundamentalistic in your belief that when you die, you're going to go somewhere else, and this is the culture that you have to abide by. So no, the Japanese people are not direct descendants from any form of reptilian, but they are descended from a very strict control law, which was given to them by a faction of the reptilians. So that was the first question, and now I've forgotten the second question.
That's okay, I've got it here. For the parents out there, what can we do to make our babies and children less of an appealing target?
Okay. Right, this is not about fear. This is not about fear, but it's a very good question. Right. Children, let's start with children. Children are taken who fall into two groups. One group is they don't come from a particularly important family, so street kids, orphans, they are taken because nobody worries, nobody cares, and that's sad. But the other end are those who are very psychic and very gifted. They're also taken. So when somebody goes to school and they start their schooling, and they're identified as very gifted and talented. And what will happen is if that kid goes into the military industrial complex, they won't be taken because they are going to serve the military industrial complex. And lots of universities are infiltrated to identify and pick up these bright kids. So as soon as they finish, they are offered a job in a semi-military contract. In terms of babies, the babies that are taken are those that, again, are come from a bloodline or have come from an abused family relationship. What can you do? What you can do is look after your children much more than I see people on the streets. You know, I see people walking on a pavement with a 4- and 5-year-old kid. United States, they call it a sidewalk. And, you know, when my kids were small, I would position myself between the road and the sidewalk and the pavement. So if the kid ran, then they got to get past me first. But I see kids, you know, just running down the sidewalk, running down the pavement, and the parents on their cell phones, their mobile phones, absolutely unaware of what's going on. So that's one huge extreme. The questioner is not asking about that, but I just wanted to say what a shocking state we're in, actually. What we can do is monitor the child as to any unusual activity going on around that child. So are there any visits, from the fourth dimension that may be occurring? Does the child show any telekinesis ability? Does it show any ability to read a mind or to read the future? Look to see if that child is showing any special traits. If you do that and you keep an eye on that child, then the chances of it being taken are very, very minimal. So generally speaking, the children that are taken are those that are orphans, street kids, but not exclusively so. It's a really, really deep and troubling subject, and it is the one that costs journalists their life. It's the one that costs whistleblowers their life, because if you can trace the paper trail back, you will be able to implicate top rungs of government, royal families, media, corporations. Less so with the military, actually, and less so with the intelligence agencies. This is more of the perversity of the rich and the wealthy, and those who are ultimately connected to a satanic cult. I can't use the name because no doubt I'll get a lawsuit. But there's a very, very big theme park, perhaps the biggest in the world. And it's not widely known there are tunnels under that theme park. And it's not widely known that plenty of children go missing in this theme park and are never found again. But we can't mention the theme park because, as I say, the way that the world is at the moment, I'm sure I'd get a writ. So just don't let kids out of your sight during crucial times. You put your kid into a beauty contest. You have no idea the dangers that you're bringing forward, or, you know, going on to television to sell things. It's not the harmless, easy thing you think. That information can and sometimes is passed to others. So just be your normal good self, your normal good parent, and the likelihood of something happen is very small. Thank you for your question.
Just there's a film called Tomorrowland, which has been out a couple of years now, and in this there's you see the child and he's on the little roller coaster thing, like they had through the haunted house and all that stuff, and a gate opens up and he goes down underneath this particular land. Showing that there is a complete subterranean world underneath this thing. And I think that's describing what you were talking about.
Yeah, although in the film, I believe he's on a boat or going on the water and it opens. The ones I'm referring to are not as high tech as that. And they're just basically doors in rooms that lead down. But it's the same principle. And whoever made that film is trying to say to you, hey, look, what do theme parks have? Theme parks have children. Often children run away from their parents and they're on their own. Oh, look, there's these underground tunnels. They wouldn't give us the figures, but I would dearly like to have the number of missing children from theme parks around the world. Because parents will report them to the police and the police are obliged to do something about it. But something like over 10 years ago, the authorities stopped coordinating the numbers of missing children because they were ordered not to. So if you've got one state in America or one place and they report how many children, you try and coordinate those figures. You try and get an overall figure for a country now. 15 years ago you could, but they've stopped that. And that's very suggestive. Thank you.
Okay, from Sandra. Mental illness and pacemakers. Thank you both for what you offer, and I love to look forward to you and look forward to your shows. Will people with mental conditions and pacemakers be healed after the upgrade of energies? Take care.
Right, it depends on the physiological and the mental damage. I mean, there are on the market, or nearly on the market, there are some very interesting drugs which we hope can make it through, which in many, if it's in a sort of a neuron disease, would be in a position to repair that. Literally, there are drugs in the pipeline which, if the system changes and would allow these drugs out, then there'll be some revolutionary changes. We have to ask ourselves, when do we hear of the last important leader dying of cancer in office? When was the last time any of the very rich and powerful, you know, had a nasty disease? It doesn't seem to affect them, does it? So I am left with the conclusion that the cure or a number of cures have been around for a good few years for those people who can afford to pay for it. But the times are changing and there are real moves afoot to bring out some really useful, I'll call it technology, I won't call it drugs, really useful technology which can reverse and assist people. Pacemakers, I'm not a doctor. I don't fully understand what a pacemaker does. But if this is a degenerative disease, then within the next 2 to 3 years, if the world goes as it should, then there will be things on the market that would greatly help that. And of course, the problem is the huge pharmaceutical organizations who will not roll over easily. So the answer is partial yes to your question. It's a really good question. Nobody, to my knowledge, has asked that. In fact, I know for a fact nobody has asked that question of me. So thank you.
One person was, and that's John McCain, who very publicly had some kind of brain cancer that seemed to have gotten better, even though he looked like he's been beaten up.
Yes, he has actually had the elite technologies used. Sometimes people are given a disease because they don't play ball, and then the disease is taken away again when they become a good boy. The number of truth movement workers who are attacked energetically, I don't mean psychic, I mean energy weapons, fried by microwaves and the like, you know, they can do that to anybody. And if a lawmaker or a politician isn't doing what they want, they will target that person. And then when that person agrees to do what they want, they then make them better. That's usually done as a warning to others, because generally they blackmail people. So that's why politicians generally don't fall out of line, because they'll be blackmailed. But there are some people who have a conscience and will step out of line. Now, I don't know in McCain's case, but I know from other sources that he did have access to something that you can't get from the high street.
So, now I'm debating whether this is a 2.5-page. All right. This is from Zeech. Night visitor and conscious ball and long-tailed shadows outside. Okay, part one, the first night. Relax, grab your tea. In June 2011, at 40 past 12 a.m., I experienced something I've never experienced before while I was attending a numerology course in the small village between hills and meadows in the mountains. One night I decided to sleep in the car instead of hotel outside the village. I parked near the road, 15 meters from the last lamppost and a small wooden bus stop. Before I went to sleep, I'd done my mental protection of myself by purple colour and used some protection paper symbol as Enoch key number 107 next to me and went to sleep. I was woken up by some police siren. My imagination in short moment in alpha waves that some police car with blue flashing light might have come to check me. But after a short moment, I realised that no car or people were there, but some beings or something with some negative energy was watching me from above. I covered myself in the sleeping bag. My heart was beating very hard like a furious pump. I felt that something bad had visited me. I could not stay. I'd taken courage and went out of my sleeping bag. No one was there, just silent night and dark outside. I was still inside of my car and observing what was going on. And for a moment, I noticed something strange. From the left side in front of the car, a clear sphere, which had about 6 inches in diameter, 15 centimeters, rapidly changed position from far left to right front outside the back mirror to the seat where I was sitting. The translucent ball was watching me for 4 to 5 seconds in the distance of about 40 centimetres away. I thought that some scanning device is watching me. I focused on it and after a very short time was gone in the similar way as it came to me. After that, it took me 20 minutes to calm down, refresh my breathing, do my energetic protection, check the time, go back to sleep again. When I was telling this story, my sensitive friend told me he felt frightened and seen something with an ugly devilish face. So the question is, what could it be, what was happening to me, and what was the meaning of that?
Right. Okay, I'm not at all surprised. You mentioned the Enoch, so you're talking a version of the Kabbalah and the magic, and you also were on a number course, numerology. If you are learning numerology, numbers, and you have a knowledge of Enochian technologies, then you will be sending out energy waves from your mind, which will be picked up. The blue flashing light was designed to freeze you. It wasn't a police car, I don't believe. It's the switch-off color code. Didn't work in your case, probably because you've been working on this numerology and you have some form of protection. I don't mean protection as in Archangel Michael, but I mean protection because you've been studying in this environment. So the blue light was designed to freeze you so that you were more compliant. You described this sphere as 6 inches, and you did not describe it as metallic. You described it as translucent or see-through, which means that it was consciousness. This is a very dense, heavy world. When somebody from another dimension projects his or her consciousness here, it is forced into a circle. It's forced into a round shape. If you were to project into the fourth or the fifth dimension, which is a much less dense environment, it's not forced into a circle. So this wasn't somebody attempting to project their physical body here, but just their mind. Someone has come to check you out. So you have inadvertently stumbled on something when you were doing your numerology and when you were doing your protection. Somehow you advertised your presence and who you were outside of this realm. And something picked that up and came in and had a look at you. So what you're looking at there is somebody's consciousness coming to look at you. Because the blue light was used, it's not good. Blue lights are only used generally by fourth dimensional beings. Something from the fifth or the sixth dimension doesn't seek to control you. It doesn't seek to incapacitate you. It would seek to engage with you on a much more level basis. That doesn't mean that they wouldn't have something. I can't say 100%, but it's unusual. Whereas every fourth dimensional traveler is equipped with a rod. The tall greys sort of 5 foot, that's a normal height. They can be taller, but the 5 foot greys have a rod probably about 12 inches to 18 inches long, which emits the blue light. And the small greys, these ones that are 3 foot, 3.5 foot, they have a rod which is about 6 inches long, and they emit the blue light. So I think what we're looking at here is a fourth dimensional entity who was attracted to you because you inadvertently advertised who you were because of your numerology and the connection to the Enochian magic. That's a good question. Be careful. Thank you.
Okay, probably last question until the break. Sweden. I'm from Sweden. Kent is from Sweden. And it appears Sweden has been overrepresented in Bilderberger meetings and is very much working on the agendas of the elite, like social engineering, high taxation, massive immigration of questionable refugees, making people into commercial units and numbers, etc. It appears Sweden is a kind of testing ground in social engineering, and if something works in Sweden, then it will be implemented elsewhere. Do you have any idea why this is and what is so special about Sweden? It is, after all, a small population tucked away up in the north.
That's precisely why. It's a small population. When you have a small country with a small population, it has a smaller media, it has a smaller government, military, etc., 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 and they're much easier to control. The bigger a country, the larger its population, the more wide-ranging its media, the harder it is to control all aspects. That's not the full story. You're right about asking what's a bit special about it. It's a Scandinavian country. It's not on a par with Iceland or Norway, which has an incredibly powerful energy. But nevertheless, it's up there. And I include, northern parts of Germany, some of the Baltic states, Finland. And it's a useful place for the elite to experience the results to their plans in an environment that's not particularly friendly. In other words, in countries like America and Britain, generally speaking, the population will implement this energy. They'll do it, but it'll go off track. In those countries that we've talked about in Scandinavia, where the attention to detail is quite precise, where the family unit is seen as very important, cleanliness, don't like pollution, want a high lifestyle, they can be corrupted, and you can infiltrate that to make those people follow through the program with more zest and vigor than, say, your Anglo-Saxon or somebody else. So in other words, that if in, say, one of those Scandinavian countries, the community or the people get behind it, they'll implement it absolutely. They'll implement it really, really well. Whereas if you look at Great Britain, it's almost like a couldn't care less attitude. Now, on one side, that scene is not very good. It's actually a saving grace of Britain, because people are incredibly independent, both in Great Britain and in America. people are independent and don't actually always operate as a group. Whereas if you look at the Scandinavian countries, they have this commitment, which is the right thing to do. They have a commitment to the group, the commitment to the larger, wider consciousness. The difficulty is that if that is subverted, then that group starts to implement policies that are not necessarily good. That is why, it's not the only country actually, but that is why that country is targeted and experimented on. So thank you, it's a good question.
Okie doke, so. There, Why Can't We Live Together by Timmy Thomas. Living in peace. There seems to be a lot of unpeace in this world. Not only that, but storms and stuff. Simon, do you have any word on all of the terrible things that are going on in America right now? There's like forest fires in the west, earthquakes in the middle, as I showed you before. And then there's this storm, the storm in Texas, but there's another storm coming up the east. Do you think they may be potentially engineered?
The storms are. No doubt about that at all. The storms are, the question is whether they can direct the storms to the locations they want. They're notoriously difficult. And often when they create a storm, or at least there's the natural storm there and then they build it up, it goes beyond where they intend it to attack. And the difficulty with it is that it can attack some of the areas that they don't want it to attack. So it can hit some particular locations that they had no intention of harming. But you're absolutely right, JP, that all across the globe at the moment, we talked about the seismic issues, which I believe are natural largely, but the above planet, above ground, I should say, that is all engineered. The weather war is really on. I used the term earlier. I said that the governments after 2012 were at war with their people. And that's a heck of a thing to say. And of course, the mainstream media would immediately jump on me for that. But it's the truth. The truth in the sense that many elite governments projected that they would lose control of their populations. And I say lose control, what I mean by the vast majority of the population would stop listening and believing in what the established authoritative voice was telling them. Never before in the history of this world have so many people in so many different countries switched off from the official line. There was a time in this country, not so long ago, that a prime minister or some lauded gentleman would sit down and say a few words on the television, and the country would come to a stop, and people would just listen to it. You know, the latest generation on this planet, we're talking about young people 20, 25 years old. How many of them listen to the Queen's speech? You know, how many people actually sit and listen to Her Majesty the Queen give the normal broadcast who are 25 years or younger? Very few. So one of the ways of controlling the population is by terrorist actions, financial activity, weather alterations, which can cause panic and fear. And that's what they're left with. They're left with trying to create fear. They can't negotiate with people. And these elite, corrupt people can't sit down and say, look, let's come to some arrangement. What they're doing is trying to force the populations of the world into pockets, into consciousness pockets. In other words, well, you know, you're all fear-driven in Australia, or you're all profit-mad in America. So trying to label people, and by sending storms down key areas, they take people's minds and attention off other things. And I was, you know, people, I want people to, I'd like people, it's a better word, isn't it? I'd like people to think back. Last show, I said, and I did it deliberately, I said we are in the eye of the storm. That's what I said, because I only had one piece of information at the time saying there was going to be a real upwelling of weather technology, and didn't have two bits of information and people know that I only go public generally when I have two independent bits of info. I'd only had one piece. That's why I've used more than once now the eye of the storm to denote a hurricane, because the one piece of information I had was that the next 6 weeks or 8 weeks were going to be the elite hell-bent, and I use the word deliberately because these people are hellish, hell-bent on manipulating the weather. And what we are seeing is exactly that. So yes, JP, thanks for bringing it up. You know, that is exactly what's going on. And it's going to be people on the coastal areas that are going to be hit hard. Thanks.
So, now you've done your people thanking, donation thanking bit already. So we don't have to worry about that. Here's a question from Sonia. Did the Greys create the Yahyel, Y-A-H-Y-E-L hybrid race with stolen human soul fragments from abductees?
Interesting. I'm not familiar with that name at all, but it's likely that I'll know that name. I'll know that race for the different name. So I can't comment on that name. I don't know it. What I can do is say that, to my knowledge, there are three groups that a branch of the Greys are genetically altered, but were commandeered. In other words, the Greys went on their own volition and started to create three specific groups. And then the overlords of that particular Grey race then became involved. Greys generally did not have the right or the technology to use what you call stolen souls. It's a bit beyond them. They are familiar with it, but you see, most Grey races operate within a vacuum. I don't mean a scientific vacuum. I mean a command and control vacuum. They're not allowed to do what a free peoples would want to do, and because they are controlled by others, to start genetically altering a race and using illegally held captured souls would require the say-so of very high-up, powerful group. The Greys don't generally do that. So there are three groups that I'm aware of where they have manipulated genetics, but they did not use captured souls. I have no knowledge of that. From time to time, a person's soul is redirected. So Source, for instance, is going to let a soul incarnate in, let's just call it, body type Z. And that's all set on the cards. And then literally, just as that's about to happen, a negative force will try and attempt to come in, hijack that soul, and place it somewhere else. But Source is not the weak, powerless entity by any means, and Source often does exactly the same. I have many, many times met people who were walk-ins or were going to incarnate in a set body, and something positive came in at the last minute and made a change. So if I say there's a war going on, I don't mean tanks and aeroplanes. I mean a game of chess, a war of chess, where Source is continually competing to keep the playing field balanced. So normally Greys do not have the authority to manipulate genetics. To my knowledge, they have on three occasions. So thank you for the question.
Great. So now, all right, completely lost my place. I'm looking for a question. Okay, here's from MC Joey. Simon, can you please expand on the wonderful art of alchemy and the part it plays in humanity's awakening? Does the alchemical operation of the sun also correspond to the sun's energy shift in this era of humanity awakening and evolving? I've got another question about the sun later, but yeah. Alchemy, the sun.
Right, there is a connection. It's not a straight connection in terms of solids. Alchemy, or the philosopher's stone, as it's really called, was the what seemed like an impossible search for the impossible elixir of life. And we only have to think about how it's represented in Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter stories, where the Philosopher's Stone is a little bit of a play on this. But you're talking also about the sun acting almost as a catalyst on the topic, on the subject. Well, when in the days of 14th century, 15th century, alchemy was very much part of an accepted science, but so was so much else. And as long as a man did it, it wasn't witchcraft. But as soon as a woman did anything, then of course that was witchcraft, because the Pope would chase after them with a burning stick. So as long as a man was doing it, it was perfectly fine. And then of course things changed, and this took the branding of magic and disappeared. But it wasn't magic. It was exactly the same as things that were done in Atlantis. It was technology. And so these secret societies understood that a technology that had been lost but could be regained was what they were striving for. And with so many of the Earth's treasures of libraries stolen by the Vatican and other organizations, it's very hard for anybody half decent to try and claw back what was lost on this planet. And the sun is most definitely acting on any physical body within its range. It is part of the evolution process. The light frequency is changing, and it is that light which is striking our Earth, which is the trigger mechanism. The Earth is doing a great deal herself, but it is the sun that is acting as the trigger. That's why, you know, we will all have a binary star system. You'll have the black sun and the yellow sun, or the white light. And without that sun, we wouldn't be able to evolve. That is why the chemtrails are up there now, to try to cut out that frequency of light. We had this eclipse, solar eclipse, a little while back. And I just wanted to say, because it's quite funny, that established science knows that sunlight has an effect on gravity. If you have an old-fashioned clock with a pendulum, and you black out the sun, that pendulum's swing will change. And then when the moon moves and the sun shines through, that pendulum will reinvigorate back to its swing. So established science knows that sunlight can affect the movement of a solid object. But they can't, or they won't, go to the next stage, which is to understand that it's the sun that's responsible for gravity. When I was at school, seems a long time ago now, I was taught that the Earth spins very, very fast, and that centrifugal force keeps us all on the ground, stops us floating off into space. It's nice and simple for people to understand, you see. And that's it. That's gravity. Whereas the top guys know that that's all nonsense. It is the sunlight striking the Earth. And as soon as we understand that, we then realize that the wavelength of light, and there's a lot to remember, that gamma rays, infrared, ultraviolet, are all just different frequencies of light. It's a wonderful menagerie of possibilities. And each of those wavelengths has a different energy and a different property. So there's a specific frequency of light that's striking the Earth, which is really propelling the changes in the Schumann resonance, the changes that we're all feeling, really tired. And we are absolutely, as a people now, shattered in terms of our energies. We are really exhausted. This is actually normal. because the physical body is desperately trying to catch up, but we are really going through some very fast changes. We can do it because we went through 2012. We went through 2012 and we were coded. That's why when the Rendlesham or the Bentwaters incident occurred, the Triangle spacecraft had to go back to, what was it, 1979, 1980, a good few years before 2012, because as you approach 2012, humans were being encoded so that they could alter within themselves and make the change. So in order to get DNA that was unencoded, you had to go back quite a way before 2012. That's why Bentwaters occurred when it did. You couldn't do it now, because if you wanted to sample DNA, from that perspective, it's too late, because we are already moving up out of the third dimension. So, yes, hey-ho, get on with it. You know, it can't come soon enough. Get your foot on the gas pedal. Come on, let's do this. Let's get through. Let's get sorted. Throw the shackles of these evil, nasty, satanic, corrupt people. And let's get on to a really good life. And the sun is playing an important message in that. And if anybody doubts it, that is why the chemtrails are there, because to these evil people, the sun is nasty. They will worship the moon. These evil people are connected to the moon. Remember, the moon is an artificial satellite. It's not a genuine living creation. The sun is. And you know, I've always said to people, trust yourself. Only believe in yourself. Look to what you think is right. Make the decision and look at it. Do you want to support the moon, or do you want to support the sun? And look at all the satanic imagery, how it really connects to the moon. Good question. Appreciate you. Thank you.
So I have a question of my own regarding the black sun. The famous German society, the SS, was the Brotherhood of the Schwarzestein, the black stone. Is that to do, or the black sun, what is the black sun? Is it the inner earth, hollow earth sun? Is it the black star that is the binary of our sun? Is it the moon? What were they? What are they? What do they worship?
Your middle answer is the correct one. If you look at the Thrule Society, the Thrule Society had this emblem of the black sun. A number of the SS, not the actual SS divisions, but some of the establishments within them, some of the secret services within them, had the black sun. Heinrich Himmler was a great worshipper and fan of the black sun. There's a binary system. Every star, like the sun, has a hidden binary. Just like positive has negative, yin has yang. So the star has its balance, it has its black star. Then the problem is that through history, things that have been hidden have usually been sought after and worshipped. And if you, and I don't recommend it, but if you were to look into the occult, you would find that there is a connection between the devil, some people say Lucifer, the devil, and the black energy. The energy that is not pure but can give life. You know, we should just want the pure energy, the energy of truth. But there is a way to invigorate into life through dark energy. That's what black magicians do. You know, that's what they operate on, a form of energy, and let's not doubt it. They are very powerful, but it's not a pure energy. It's a corrupted energy. And so the black sun is a portal. Yeah, so is the sun, actually, but they are different. They work differently. You know, you could take a spacecraft very close to the sun and not really be hot enough to fry any toast. But the black sun has steeped in mythology, Sumerian, Babylonian times, and before that. Interestingly enough, although Atlanteans didn't recognize the black sun, the Lumerians did. And that's the connection that went down to the hollow earth. And that is why Adolf Hitler was so fascinated with Tibet. That is why Schwabenland, Antarctica, looking at the connections, just let the police car go by. You have to do it deliberately. Didn't they? Well, it is 8:30. There is absolutely nobody on there. The traffic lights are green, but he's decided to go and put that horrible siren on. Absolutely ridiculous.
Kick it in, it's Simon's show. So.
Almost, yes. But so, the connection with the Black Sun, it's not evil. It's not evil. It's a natural balance to the creational force, but it's been worshipped by occult organizations, from the time began.
Okay. So, dear Simon, this is from Rose. Can you please tell us if there is life on or in the sun? Lots of sun questions there.
No, there isn't, but it is possible to pass through the sun. Oh, you've gone.
No, I haven't gone. Just, oh, sure. Oh, that was the answer. Right, it's possible
there
to
was
pass.
There was a very large static click.
Oh, right.
And I thought I'd lost you. Right, so my answer is no, but if you had the right type of craft, you could actually pass through the sun. So it's not a fanciful question. You know, there's actually a lot of truth to this, that it's not just a ball of gas that's on fire with a nuclear explosion in it. It's far more complicated than that. That's why in the 1980s and 90s, the US sent so many probes to the sun, because they really understood and they tried to measure, and a number of probes have been sent into the sun. So they've got a very clear idea of what it is. Good question, actually. Thank you.
I hope they went at night. Anyway, Lauren, I've both read and experienced that there is a natural dip in chi or energy around 2 p.m. 1400 for those not in America. I am wondering whether it's creating poetry, art, or materializing the life of your dreams. Is there a peak time of creativity?
Oh, interesting. Right. The dip you're referring to is not a dip that occurs within humans. It is because of the closeness that we get to the fourth dimension. If you think of a straight line, that won't work. If you think like a sine wave, a wave that slowly climbs and then goes down, climbs and goes down. And if at the top end of that is the fourth dimension and below it is the third dimension, as the sine wave moves up, it gets very close to the fourth dimension before dropping down again. Well, at 1400 hours, in actual fact, it's between 1400 in the morning, I'm talking about, 02 o'clock a.m. and 03 a.m. Between that hour, we are the closest to the fourth dimension. And this is when most things can try and come through, or we can experience most. If you are going to do any sort of out-of-body experience, don't do it between 2 and 3 o'clock, because you are very close to the film of the fourth dimension, and you are going to attract quite a lot of attention to you. Now, they don't give out statistics like this anymore, but back in the 1960s, there was a research done, and they showed that most burglaries in Great Britain occurred around about 2:30 in the morning. And there's no coincidence for that. So, final question there. No, everyone, thank goodness, is different. And somebody could be tremendously creative at 5:30 in the afternoon. Somebody could be fantastically creative at 4:00 in the morning. It is about your own personal energy, what you've eaten that day, what you've done to keep yourself balanced, if you've had good, pleasant experiences, if you've been in a loving environment, if you've been out into to nature and you've tried to connect with the planet, if you've done some good things that day, if you've surrounded yourself with positive intent, then you are much more likely to create at the time that's right for you, rather than any external hands turning on a clock. No, we're all individual, we're all different, And some people are morning people, aren't they? And some people are nighttime people. It is a very good question, because you have understood that there is some form of trade-off between this reality and our closest neighbour, which is the fourth dimension, and that some people are undoubtedly sensitive and, you know, are drawn that way. And of course, I would always caution against that. But ultimately, you know, people who take mind-expanding drugs like LSD generally do so because they are finding experiences or trips that you don't get with many other drugs or until the synthetic drugs of the last few years. That is because the mind is taken out of the third dimension on occasion and put into the fourth dimension, and you are experiencing things that you could never get your head around in the third dimension. I'm not suggesting that people do that to be creative, although many, many artists have done it purely to be creative. But my warning is, between 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the morning, just be a little bit more careful. So thank you for the question.
It's known as the witching hour, isn't it? The 3 o'clock in the afternoon is the blessing hour, and 3 o'clock in the morning is the true witching hour.
Yeah. And not, this is interesting, I'll come in on this, and not midnight. You see, what the Catholic Church did was it wanted to take people, as it always does, take people away from the truth. And so kids, with trick-or-treating, talk about witchcraft, always think about midnight. The clock strikes midnight, the witching hour. And that's just to throw people off the truth. As time and time and time again, the establishment want to muddy the waters. They want to disconnect people from the reality. It is not midnight. Midnight is not, as you said, it's between 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock. That is the crucial time. Midnight is just another mark on the clock. Thank you.
Okay, so now, taboo subjects. Okay, there's a little bit of a plaintiff in there. From this, what's his name? Colts. I need to know the truth about the product I use to save lives. My question is cannabis an alien plant brought here from otherworldly places for us to discover its healing benefits, or is it an earthly miracle? Did it originate on Earth or another planet? And is it good or bad for the pineal gland, and does it assist with meditation? All mammals have cannabinoid receptors, so it seems to be significant.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not alien. It is native to the planet. However, it was genetically altered. After the Great Flood, assistance was given to people to plant crops. And we're talking about not some guy who gets some wheat and then throws it down and it grows, and then he sort of says, "Well, these four bits of wheat grow really well. Let's plant them." And over about 500 years, he selects, in a Charles Darwinian style, he selects the corn that grew the best. That's all nonsense. Anybody who's anybody in this industry knows that barley, maize, wheat didn't come from husks that were from sort of a very wild type of rye grass. They were genetically altered. And this was done to give humanity a bit of quite a big help, because we had suffered large devastation to the population. Now, the cannabis plant is one of those, and it's a medicinal plant. And the writer in has mentioned certain things like the pineal gland. The answer is yes, it is beneficial. But of course the elite don't want the ordinary people to have it, because it's something that they want. If you give ordinary people, and remember I'm using their terminology, if you give ordinary people access to something that was never intended for them, was intended for the elite, for the gods, then ordinary people will start to see things and have the truth and heal themselves when they should be buying drugs in bottles. So any time the establishment says, don't do that, you want to take an interest in why. Sometimes it might be genuine, but in most cases there's an ulterior motive. You can actually now buy the oil now legally and in the marketplace, and that's because pressure has been brought to bear because it does show that it's very beneficial. So yes, good question. Thank you.
So there you go. Right. So here's a question from Sarah. Dear Simon, we believe we have an attachment or something that has followed us from our last home. We wake with scratches, bruises, burnt hair, and a sense of being watched. We have seen a man in our new home, and often a dark mist, and always wake at 3 a.m. It's always cold here too. We feel it impacts our lives despite trying to stay positive. We have two young children and desperately want this to go. Please help.
Right. Anybody would think that we'd paid a £5 note here, wouldn't they? Because we've just been talking about 3 o'clock being the witching hour, and the next question comes in and says this is exactly what's happening at 3 o'clock.
There you go.
And it's just genuinely the way these questions come in. Right. I'm just quickly processing the information you've given me to try to understand what we're dealing with here.
Scratches, bruises, yeah, burnt hair,
but
and burnt, a sense of being watched.
The burnt hair is interesting. I would like to know whether there's a smell of burning. Right, I can't give you an answer because it could be literally on the evidence you've given me. It could be either of two things. You know, the key here is you said it's followed you from the old house, which means it's not connected to the house or the location, it's connected to you, it's after you as an individual. And you've got children, so it's an absolute high priority, and I will assist you. If you have children and you are struggling financially, then I won't make a charge. If you would like to send me an email, put star in the header. I never charge when there are children involved. I mean, if you've got a really good job, then you can make a donation, but if you're a bit struggling on the old finances, then I will do this for free because I don't like children being hurt. So correct me off an email, star in the header, and it will be added to the others and it will be prioritized. It is reasonably serious because this thing is following you. We need to understand, or I need to understand, because it's only me that does it. I need to understand why it's doing this. But based on the bit of information you've given me, it could either be a demonic force, or it could be a purely simple reptilian creature that's hell-bent on torture. So either way, get in touch with me and I will get rid of it. Thank you.
Okay, now from Ashley. First of all, thank you from the bottom of my heart for all that you do for humanity. I've been listening to your interviews for over 4 years now. What are your thoughts on sacred geometry and the Merkaba? I have more specific questions, but I would like to hear your thoughts on this subject.
Right. Thank you for staying with me for 4 years. That's quite something. Thank you. You know, I look back and I've been going now for 7 years. Although I didn't sort of really kick off until more recently, but yeah, it's in some ways it's gone by really quickly, and in other times it's, oh wow, you know, we're still at this level. although we have made progress and I'm really pleased. Right. We've got to be very careful that we don't blanket something as being evil because we don't understand it. You set themes going, you see. If you put something on YouTube and you get behind it, then you can make something out to be evil when it's not. The Merkaba, we were talking about Enoch earlier, is a very, very ancient form of technology, understood by adepts at the tarot, understood by those who have studied the medium grades and higher grades of the hidden magics. It is not evil in itself, no. But it provides like a generator, an immense power stroke opportunity. I won't use the word portal, but it provides the ability for he or she who can manipulate the energies to turn what could be quite mundane magic into something that's quite powerful. So the Merkaba is not evil. If you're a good person and you access it and you use it, you create good energy, good magic. If you are evil intent, then you will create evil magic. The difficulty is, and we have people like Solomon, who weren't overly nice, and others who have accessed that power and have a bit of a reputation. And so anything to do with that has got a bit of a bad taste to it. But the true answer to your question is no, it's not evil. It's he or she who crafts the energy. If they are of good intent, no evil can come of it. Thank you for your question.
Okay, from Mandalika, New York. Hi, Simon and JP. The light brings me to you, you know. After listening to one of your previous recordings, I feel I could be a cat being. Though an animal lover, I'm specifically drawn to cats and take care of all neighborhood cats, concentrating on the weak ones. Strangely enough, I'm equally drawn to King Tutankhamun's narrative. Would you say this could be some significance to my previous being? Looking for answers, and thank you so much for all the work you do, and much merit to you both.
Yes, broadly. I can't just say yes 100%, because there are some people that just love rabbits and just love snakes or eagles for no other reason than they just love them. But you've added the extra bit there about Tutankhamun, who actually he used to write poetry as well as lore. People don't understand that. He was quite learned. Without a photograph, I can't give you a definitive answer. But if you want to drop me a line, then I can do a Skype with you and I'll tell you straight away. So generally people who are connected to cats do so for a number of reasons that are both on planet and off planet. But I would suggest that on balance, on the little bit of information you've given me, the answer is yes. I would go along with that. But until I could have a proper look at you, I couldn't say for sure. But yeah, why not? Yeah, why not? Thank you. Good question.
Okay. So, dear Simon, JP, this is from Steinout. My question is about soul fragments. I had a dream a few years ago before my awakening that I was Ulysses S. Grant. I didn't do or see much as him, but I just knew I was him. It was somewhat strange feeling in retrospect, but at the time felt very natural and real. So recently I've read about him, and it turns out we're quite similar. Receptive type, very blue eyes, excellent with animals, as well as a shared love of spending our free time happily drinking whiskey by the bottle.
Huh.
I have reformed a bit. I'm 5'6", he was 5'8", so seems fairly close. Photo comparisons is fairly close too. I believe my soul is Pleiadian to some degree. He was born April 27th, 1822, and I was November 8th, 1983. At first, I thought the dream was just my imagination, but then thought maybe it was just an experience to get me thinking in order to awaken. But then considered I could actually be him, but now I'm maybe part him or something. The breaking apart of a soul seems like a violation of natural order or law, but apparently is common. How and why do souls fragment? And did I experience someone else's memories because we share some soul energy and that provided a link to the memory? Are the fragments just energetic copies of the original, or does the original soul actually break apart?
You're losing me.
How and why do souls fragment?
Right. No. It's a more interesting question than that. Absolutely, you could be Ulysses H. Grant. Why not? Unfortunately, with the joke about everybody believes they're Napoleon has so many people set themselves up as psychoanalysts. The reality is that two things can occur. The soul of that individual has to reincarnate. If it's going to come back here and recycle, it has got to go into a body. So it's got to be into somebody. It's a bit like the state lottery or the national lottery in Great Britain. Somebody's got to win it. So somebody has got to be X and somebody's got to be Y. If you feel, without a question of a doubt, that you were that person, then believe in yourself. You know, that's how people have these past life memories. You know, I have, not hugely, but a number of people who have like been moved beyond words, when they've read a passage or they've been to a location or they've seen a gravestone or something, and they've realized that they are that person, that soul from that person is in their body. So it's absolutely perfectly possible. And if you believe that to be the case, then that is who you are. Of course, you can't go around saying that widely because, you know, you'll just be put into a safe house. However, you talk about soul fragmentation. I talk about the Christ consciousness. When there was a move to try to counterbalance all the evil that was successfully consuming humanity, the Christ consciousness was spread out over the planet to, like seed dropped from a packet, to try and grow in different people, not hundreds of thousands of people, but thousands of people. And that's different from the soul of Christ coming into that person. It is a connection, a bit like the divine feminine, where a person can have a connection to that individual, can have flashback memories, but is connected via a feedback, if you like. So it's not that real person, it's a feedback, and that's designed to protect them, but it's also designed to push out the good, to try to spread it out over the planet, to try to get people away. And so that's a positive movement of the soul. Now the other, we talk about soul fragmentation, and we have come from different disciplines. So a shaman would talk about soul fragment retrieval in a way that I wouldn't understand, because I would look at it as a split alternate personality. But the training or the cure that a shaman would have is not dissimilar from what I would do with an individual who had what a shaman would call a fractured soul, or a piece of the soul that was lost, and they would go back to retrieve that split soul or that fragment of that soul. But I don't work like that, but the result is the same. So when we start talking about soul fragmentation, there are many different types of soul fragmentation. And I can't begin to answer it there. So I've given you the two answers that I think are probably best suited to the question. And I hope that that goes some way to giving you an answer. Thank you.
Yeah. And ease off on the whiskey. Anyway, there we go. So during this is time travelers question. During a group meditation with about 8 people, we were encouraged to go higher and higher. And suddenly I was in an etheric marble gigantic room with about 5 stairs running roughly half the length of the room leading up to a platform. I was not even as tall as the first step. I saw what I would call a Roman or Greek godlike person dressed in robes to his knees with a swathe of material thrown over a shoulder, sitting in a type of throne built into these stairs. He looked at me and said, "How did you get here?" And I shouted to him in my loudest voice, because I was so small there, "Are you a god?" But no answer. He turned to his right away from me, and 3 floating beings that I would describe as nymphs appeared flying peacefully across the room. They looked feminine, with dresses that flowed behind them. They joined together head to toe and formed a whirling circle, came around me, and I was picked up off the floor in their vortex, and the speed of whirling went faster and faster around me. This was a lovely feeling, getting this energy. Then, poof, I landed back in my 3D seat. Do you think this being was what we used to call a god? I have wanted to know what the gods really were all my life, but gave up after reading explanations in books that just didn't make sense. This seems to be a part of Simon, your expertise. Thank you, muchly.
Right, thank you. When an individual becomes, you don't mean badly, when they become fixated or when you become focused on one particular topic and you won't let go, your whole development begins to slow down. And so sometimes a good force wishes to break that deadlock and give you an experience that confirms or denies what you're seeking. So what you're describing there is Olympus, which is the Greek understanding of the gods living in the clouds. What's fascinating is you talk about the stairs being taller than you. So we're always talking about giants. However, there is a downside to this, and that is that quite naturally, what you said, and that was the wrong thing to say. I and others, as often as I can anyway, will say to people, don't give your power to somebody else. You know, don't invest in gurus, don't invest in, you know, guys in caves and guys sitting on top of a mountain. Just look at something and make that decision yourself. Don't give your sovereignty away to anybody. So when you said, are you a god? What you did was you failed the test because you acted as if you were inferior to this being. And as a result of that, you had a very nice experience and you were returned back. If you get that opportunity again, and you might do, I'd like you to actually address the being as equals. I once had, many times, but I once had a interesting visit from the being I call Mum, who said to me, and was very keen to make sure that I knew, he said to me, we are all equal. And he said to me, you should never be scared of us. So what he was teaching me was, just because someone's got technology which may be a quarter of a million years more advanced, just because somebody has the ability to, with their mind, lift an object and send it across the room, it doesn't mean they're any better than you or me. What it does mean is that they've had a lot longer to get their act together. Remember, the human race is a very new race. We are really new. And I think we've done fantastic to get to where we've got. All these other races have been going round and round and round the mill for so long I don't even know. And that's why they've got all those psychic capabilities. But it doesn't mean they're any more spiritually advanced than we are. And the truth is that most of them are not as spiritually advanced as we are. So if anybody gets an experience like that, do not fall on your knees. Do not get down on your knees. You know, some people do it for the Pope, don't they? Don't do it. Treat this being as an equal. Yeah, be respectful. But don't give your power away. You are a human being. You are fantastic. You are absolutely beautiful. You are one of the greatest creations anywhere. So when you are faced with something that's huge and big and powerful, well, you know, just have a little chat. So I reckon if that happened now, you would be a little bit more composed and you could try and get into some sort of dialogue. But on the positive side, it came to help you. And that is not a negative experience. It shows me that you were so determined to find the answer here that other things were being put on hold. It came in and broke the logjam. I've had that a couple of times with things, and you know, it helps you to move on. I don't think you were hallucinating. I think that's a very real experience, and you're very blessed to have had that experience. Great. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Okay. Now, as a corollary, Zerva Maria Dear Simon, I would like to ask you, who was really Greek god Apollo? And what was his name in the Egyptian deities? Thank you, Dees.
No, I can't go through that one. The difficulty that we have is because many forms were corrupted, deliberately designed to, as time moves, the human race developed and changed, and it became broadly more sophisticated, although sometimes it went down a dead alley. So what the manipulating force did was to say it was going to give each time frame a god or a set of gods. And as the, because they're all the same, they've got different names, but they're all the same entities. So as you went from Sumerian, Assyrian, Babylonian, Egyptian, Phoenician, Greek, Rome, the same gods just appear time and time again, but they become more sophisticated or they become more covert. And even scholars, establishment scholars, are not sure as to which god became which god. And if you were to go beyond the Western world into Asia and India, you'll find that many of those same gods, but they are the same gods, although again they've been dressed up for the culture. So I didn't actually study that, and I don't have an interest in it, not because I think it's wrong, but because I came to a conclusion very early on that there's all just the same set of gods anyway, which are not gods at all. They are entities from another dimension who wish to manipulate and control the human race and set their images up, set their special gifts up, and they then created followers on the planet. So you'd have, Isis would have her feminine group, which then became obviously the Vestal Virgins. And, you would sacrifice, or you would do this, or you would do that. And it's all totally negative. It's all totally negative. A fascinating subject. Yes, you can do a degree course on it, but don't get drawn into it, because this is a way that these things can draw you in. They're not dead and buried. The energy still resides. It's still very powerful. It has had lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And then we look at the Judeo-Christian God. Get rid of all these other idol images and just replace it with one God. So this is what I mean by humanity developing. While humanity was relatively primitive, it was given a God of the harvest and a God of the waters, the rain, and God of the skies, a God of the craftsman. And then as humanity developed, it was that this isn't working anymore. So we're now ready to give them one God, all things to all men. You know, I'm everything. I'm the God of this and God of that, but it's me. It's all manipulation and control. It's all it is. It's just another method to control people. You know, why? I once went to a, and this is going to sound really awful. I once went to a graduation ceremony. I'm not going to say who it was. It wasn't mine. And there was something like 300 people in the auditorium, in the hall. And then the senior guy from the university comes in with his flat cap and his long flowing robe. It's so long. It's got a guy holding the end, like when you get married, when a woman gets married. And it was this troop of people. Who do they think they are? And I was the only person that didn't stand up, because the person had made the message: when he comes in, please show your respect and stand up. Why would I stand up for somebody who's no better than me? And this is the problem we have. It's all about a control system. It's, you know, in the old days in this country, you used to have to pull your hat, tug your hat when the Lord went past. Now, I'm not preaching revolution. What I'm preaching is freedom. You know, you wouldn't do that in the street. So when suddenly a ceremony, people put on the robes, they invoke great ancient wisdoms. Suddenly we forget all our logic and our sensibility, and we just go back into this robotic response. This has all got to change. This has all got to change. So no, it is a fascinating subject, and I'm not knocking that. I'm just aware of the dangers and the fact that these people are all the same gods, still living today. Their lifespan is incredibly long. So it may not have been the answer you wanted, but I'm sure you could go Google the answer. But it's an interesting question, and I thank you for asking it.
There we go. We have to go. We're out of time.
Oh, really? It goes so quickly.
It does, doesn't it? So, but see you in a couple of weeks. Any final messages?
No, just the rest period's over now. Be on your guard, everybody. This is it now. Let's see where we go with it. God bless to everyone. I love you all very much. Thanks, JP. Take care.